WBEZ is supported by Rivian. Off-road electric Joyride ride-alongs are available in downtown Chicago in a Rivian truck or SUV from September 19th to the 21st at the corner of East Illinois and North Michigan. Plus, a chance to win a two-night stay at a luxury Chicago hotel. Terms apply. No purchase necessary. Entry period is September 12th through the 21st. Must be 21 to enter. Odds of winning depend on number of entries. Visit Rivian.com/Chicago Sweepstakes to enter.
America is changing, and so is the world.
But what's happening in America isn't just the cause of global upheaval. It's also a symptom of disruption that's happening everywhere.
I'm Asma Khalid in Washington, D.C.
I'm Tristan Redman in London, and this is The Global Story.
Every weekday, we'll bring you a story from this intersection, where the world and America meet.
Listen on bbc.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm your host, Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. Become the first Black woman elected to the U.S. Senate. Check. Serve as the first woman senator for Illinois. Check. Hold the position of U.S. ambassador to New Zealand and Samoa. Check, check, check. That is how I imagine it sounds when Carol Moseley Braun runs through items on her to-do list, because she's accomplished all those things and much more. So that would make her a trailblazer, right? Yeah, and she agrees. Well, now she does. And it's the title of her new memoir. Braun, who's the self-professed Black girl from the South Side of Chicago, tells readers the full story of her extraordinary life. And I mean full. All of the ups and downs are in there, too. So at the table with me was Ambassador Carol Moseley Braun, author of Trailblazer, Perseverance in Life and Politics. She was born and raised on the South Side, so the ambassador began by talking about how her upbringing shaped her worldview and ambitions.
It wasn't ambition. It was kind of a path that was laid out before me, and I just one foot in front of the other and went down the road.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I've never considered myself to be ambitious. And in fact, my whole focus has been on doing the best job I can wherever it is I'm planted.
I find that so hard to believe, hearing you say, I never considered myself ambitious. You got to explain that.
Well, no, ambitious means you set a goal. You say, I want to be that.
Mm-hmm.
I never did that.
Mm.
I've just kind of ambled along and did what I was supposed to do wherever it was that I was planted. And that's been my story. Frankly, I think that came out of the book.
Yeah.
Out of the book, too, as well. So I suppose if I have one message, it is to follow your joy. Do what makes you happy.
Yeah.
And just do the best job you can where you're planted. That was my mother's message to me all the time.
Well, speaking of planting seeds, too, your father was the first to suggest to you to become a lawyer. I want to know when you knew that you wanted to enter that world of public service. When was that?
It was the bobolinks. I'll be honest with you. I didn't know I was going to go into public service at all. I didn't know I was going to be a lawyer. And in fact, there's a story I think it's even recounted in the book about how I was walking down the street with a friend who was about to take the LSAT.
Yes.
I'd never heard of it. It's like, so what is that? You're going to take the exam? He said, yes, to get into law school. Well, my dad had been pounding law school in my head for years
because
he was a frustrated would-be lawyer.
That's right.
And so it made sense to me to sign up for the test, and that's what I did.
And here we are.
And here we are.
I got to ask, because as just a regular citizen here, I know some of the frustrations and some of the challenges I see when it comes to the state of politics in this country today. From your view, what does it look like to you, especially compared to when you think back to the time when you first stepped into this field? Does this just look like a puddle of chaos right now?
It looks like I may have failed. Not just me, but my generation may have failed.
Mm.
We had such wonderful hopes about what the world we were going to leave behind us. And of course, it has not worked out the way. And so it really has been it feels like failure on the one hand. On the other, it's a challenge. And I just hope that people don't get so depressed about the current state of affairs that they just disconnect. And get personal, look into themselves, and just get selfish I hope that that's not the result. I'm afraid it may be, unfortunately.
Do the current state of affairs get you down?
Sometimes. I have to tell you, I have not. I've never seen it this way. And I've been through, what, four presidents in my lifetime. It has never been this way. And I don't want to just be a Trump basher, because that's not real productive. But the fact of the matter is that I've just never seen this. It's like, how do you get to this from the democratic principles and ideals on which this country was built? I mean, how do you get to locking down cities, whole cities, for no good reason? How do you do that? And so it gets a little depressing sometimes, but I can't afford to be depressed. None of us can afford to be depressed, even though it's a depressing situation. We just have to chin up and buckle up and just keep fighting and keep pushing.
Yeah.
And keep insisting on the world that you want to leave for your grandchildren. The Native Americans say it's not just one generation ahead. You have to look seven generations ahead. And all of us have a responsibility to look seven generations ahead.
So in 1992, you became the first Black woman elected to the U.S. Senate. Does it ever get old hearing that?
No, it doesn't. In fact, quite frankly, even at the time, it didn't really strike me how profound that was.
Even though that was the year of the woman, as they called it?
They came up with that after the fact. I was really kind of annoyed, because when I got elected to the state legislature, they called that the year of the woman. And it's like, wait a minute.
How many years of the woman could there be?
Right. So we only get a year? I mean, seriously.
Right.
So, but yeah, no, I still have to come to grips with the moment of what that meant. I know that when I got to the Senate, I was the only person of color there.
If you man or woman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you don't include the one Native American who was in my class, as well as the two Hawaiian Islanders who were there.
Yeah.
So
how did that feel? Take me back to 92. How did that feel?
I've been there before, so it wasn't unusual. You know, I knew I was there kind of as a duckbill platypus of the whole organization. Mm-hmm. But I decided that my responsibility is just do the best job that I could. Back to my mother, best do the job that I could where I was planted. And that's what I tried to do. And that's where I worked with, you know, that's what I work with all the time.
Yeah, you bring up a good point when you say I'd been there before, because we know that being women of color in really many industries, but politics for sure, you're often the first.
And the only.
The only, right. So when you're a token in such a powerful space, what is that like?
Well, you can't focus on that. You have to focus on doing, again, the best job you can where you're planted, and trying to get through it, and leave people impressed with what it is you have to contribute. Because if you focus in on yourself, you'll get overwhelmed. And so I never did. I couldn't do that because I didn't have the opportunity to do it. In fact, I tell a story in the book even that I don't think the moment of it came through as much as I would have liked, actually. I got very overwhelming sometimes. And one day I went home after, and I lived right across the street from the Capitol.
Right.
And one day I went home, I was getting ready for bed, and I was, that's it, I'm not doing this anymore. This is crazy. You know, this is too much. So I was getting ready. I took my makeup off. You know, you do the routine, right?
The ritual, yes.
Right. So I was going through my ritual, and I was going to quit. But when I turned on the television, which was part of my routine, I'm getting ready for the next day, and the first thing to come on was Roots. I said, I'm not looking at this.
Of all films.
Right. And then I turned this channel, and it was another film, not Roots. It was about a lynching that happened in Texas or someplace. And I said, I'm not watching this either. And then I turned the third movie that came, TV program that came up, was another thing about the history. This is the Underground Railroad or something like that.
Oh, it's boy.
I looked at the ceiling. I said, well, why are you doing this to me? What is the message here? Am I missing something? It's like, why is this happening? So, and every time I got ready to just give up and quit, something happened that it didn't happen. So I hung in there and did my best job and did what I could do. And it was, I'm glad I did, because that, frankly, that made it worthwhile. And that made me not ashamed that many years later of my tenure.
Why is right now the right time to tell your full story?
Well, it's not. It's as much of a full story as I could get. The fact is that every time people keep saying, when are you writing your book? When are you writing your book? I heard that so many times from people. Like, you know, I'll do it when I can. I've been very busy.
Yeah.
And when
just a little bit.
Yeah, just a little bit. But when I got back, when I decided that it was the time, that I had the time to do it, I did what I could do and started with it. And frankly, the publisher gave me a ghostwriter, Donna Owens. And Donna, she actually did the writing because I would start writing something and get distracted and go off, whatever, and take a nap, whatever. But the fact is that that Donna did a really good job of capturing my voice and put it into an actual memoir.
Yeah, that's wonderful. It's mentioned in Trailblazer how you used to take books with you to the Chicago waterfront and sit and read, and you would sort of feel like you're escaping to new worlds,
right.
I think is how it was written. Any other special places around here, around the city, that helped you recharge?
That was one. No, Chicago is, I breathe and bleed Chicago.
Lots of options here, right?
That's right. This is such a great city. And I don't think I'd be the person I am if it weren't for Chicago.
Why do you say that?
Well, because the city, first off, to begin with, everybody's very down to earth. Everybody is very straightforward and down to earth here. And I always appreciated that. That formed me. I was able to get to know different constituencies and different communities because of the way the city is set up. And not set up, but the way the city developed over time.
Mm-hmm.
And so, it's really a great place to live, a great place to grow up, and it's a great place to know about because Chicago is so diverse. And so it's a real potpourri of people.
Yes.
And different things. And I think that helps broaden your perspective, or should, if you're paying attention, it'll broaden your perspective.
Right. You get super personal in this book. You go back to your childhood. You talk about what it was like growing up with parents who were going through, I'll use the word messy.
Yeah.
A messy divorce.
Yep.
Right? What was the biggest lesson for you out of that?
It was a difficult time. My poor mother, you know, she did the best she could to hold on to all of us. There were four of us at the time, and she did everything she could. And frankly, it really set my mind on how women have to work doubly hard to be counted as half as good.
Mm-hmm.
And so she had to work very hard to keep her little family together. And quite frankly, she never complained about anything. But she just carried on and just one foot in front of the other back to that message. And so that helped shape me. When I got to the state legislature, by the way, one of the first bills that I passed into law had to do with discrimination against families with children. She had such a hard time. We had moved from one ownership of one house,
mm-hmm.
to my grandmother's place, my grandmother's home.
That's right.
And then she tried to find a place to rent.
And some of you were split at that time, right?
Yep.
She took the older kids to grandma's place.
The younger kids went to grandma's place in Indiana.
And you stayed with her.
Yes, I stayed with her. My brother stayed with her. And so, again, one of my first bills in the state legislature had to do with discrimination, landlords discriminating against families with children. Saying, you know, you can't do that because there were people who wouldn't rent to her because she had four kids. You know, and she was unabashed about that, but they wouldn't rent to her because of her children. And it's like, you know, that's not right. And so I, as a state legislator, that was one of the first things I was able to change. Thank goodness.
Yeah.
And so the experience really did impact me greatly and help make me who I am. I had lived such a sheltered life pretty much up until that point that had it not been for all of that.
Yeah.
I don't think I'd be who I am.
So the book title, it emphasizes perseverance.
Yes.
In the subtitle. That word strikes me, Ambassador, because, I think about what it means. I also think about the fact that you start the book with a chapter called Barriers. And then I think of the person, the subject behind the book. You spent a lifetime breaking barriers. That's kind of what you did.
But I didn't know that's what I was doing.
You were challenged in every which way along the way. You dealt with several controversies. Talk me through that, that perseverance word. What does it mean to you?
It means you just, again, you just stick with it. It's stick-to-itiveness. You just keep going and one foot in front of the other. You keep doing the best job you can wherever it is that you are.
What kept you grounded, though? You were navigating such high-pressure jobs.
My faith, and then beyond that, my family. Yeah. So, you know, they will never, you know, your family will never let you get too big for your britches, okay?
That's
so
true.
So they kept me grounded. That and my faith kept me grounded. So you put all of that together, and that's how I was able to get through. I just kind of tucked tail and just kind of kept doing what I thought was the right thing. And if you keep doing that, then you've got no regrets. And that was the most important thing to me. I didn't want to have regrets for anything that I'd done, either in public or private life. And I didn't. I don't.
Is that advice that you give to others?
Yes.
Live your life with no regrets?
Right. Do the best job you can. And, you know, will you mess up? Yes. Everybody messes up. You know, none of us is blameless. And so you do the best job you can. And you won't always get it right, but you'll get it right most of the time. And if you do that and tell the truth, you know, you have to tell the truth, because that way you don't have to worry about what your story was.
That's true, too. When then President Bill Clinton gave you that call and he said, I want you to be the U.S. ambassador to New Zealand and Samoa. You write in the book, you said, I nearly dropped the phone. Because that came at a time where you were kind of stuck. You called it a low period in your life, right?
I was stuck. I just lost an election. Mm-hmm. The first time I'd lost
an
election.
Didn't get that second term?
Didn't get a second term. And I didn't quite know, do I want to go back and practice law some more or whatever? I didn't quite know what to do with myself.
What was that like when you said, like, it seemed no one would hire me?
Well, that's true.
And you're thinking, I'm Carol Moseley Braun.
But, I guess because the controversies around when you are first, you draw lightning bolts to yourself. And it really is kind of a situation in which I now, in hindsight, understand why a lot of people may have considered me to be too volatile for their corporate, you know, button-down image.
Oh.
And so it dawned, you know, and so I just kind of recognized that was part of my story, and I was just going to keep going. At one point, I was going to farm. I mean, that we hadn't you hadn't talked about the organics business.
That's right.
Into organics. I was convinced. I wasn't a Robert Kennedy by any means, but I was convinced that our food supply needed attention. And so that became a cause for me. And so my family has a farm in Alabama, a large farm actually, but it's been fallow and they've not farmed it for a generation. When I was a little girl, I can remember these bags of pecans that were big enough that if one had fallen on me, I wouldn't be sitting here today.
Wow.
So farming was one option that I considered. I'd just go back to the farm and get involved with creating organic food and actually biodynamic organic, which is really like organic plus.
Yes.
So.
That's cool.
Yeah. And I was really excited about it. But as it turned out, I had to make a living because I couldn't just create out of whole cloth, create a living out of the farm. Because, again, it had been sitting there fallow for a generation.
But here came a huge, huge job.
Yep.
Yeah. Speaking of family, you mentioned family a moment ago, and I'm thinking of the delightful photos that you have inside your memoir. One that strikes me is actually that moment when you're being sworn in as ambassador. I don't know if you've noticed this, but your son is in the photo, obviously, Matthew. He's standing there. He's looking at you with such admiration.
He's magnificent.
You called him the light of your life.
He is.
How proud is he?
Did my face just light up just
now? It did.
Okay.
It did. I'm lighting up for you.
Yeah, he's wonderful. I've been so blessed. I mean, when you consider, you know, not everybody has this, has a family that wants to take care of them in their dotage. And so my son has stepped up to the plate.
Yeah.
He takes care of everything for me. I'm actually his tenant. I don't own the house I live in that right now.
Well, that's
does.
Nice that you can stick around. You write a letter to your grandchildren at the end of the book. So I gather you're super close with them.
Oh, yes. They are magnificent. They're 7 years old and they're twins. 7 year old twins. So they
so
are
cute.
Truly the light of my life. And I spend as much time as I can with them.
Is there a lesson that you feel that you had to learn the hard way, but you want that next set of trailblazers, the next generation, to avoid?
Mistakes made? Yes, there are, but I'd be hard-pressed to actually catalog them right now. I haven't written them down. But yes, there are. I've made mistakes. We all have.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just terrible. I mean, I look back and the mistakes are sometimes, it's funny too, because sometimes the mistakes time turn out to be serendipity. The mistakes turn out to be a good thing.
Nice when that happens, isn't
it? Oh, yeah, it is. It just happened this week for me. So it's like it was something that seemed like it was bad turned out to be something really good.
Yeah.
And so, but these things happen. And again, that's just life. And so that's back to perseverance. If you just recognize that both the ups and the downs are part of life, you don't get all of either. You get mm-hmm. you get a little of both. And you have to be able to take the bitter with the better and just go along and do the best job you can.
You started out this conversation by telling me, you know, to hold on to my joy. Mm-hmm. What is bringing you joy these days?
My grandbabies. My grandbabies for sure. I'm still traveling a lot. That's not as much as I used to. I damaged a knee in West Africa.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah. No, I'm okay.
And you're still dealing with that.
Yeah. You know, when you get older, you heal more slowly. The funny thing about that was when I was in high school, I was a tumbler, a cheerleader. And something, you fall and you get right up, like kids, right?
Right.
They fall, they get right back up, they brush them all, they keep going. You know, you get to a certain age when that fall is not, you don't just get up right
not from the same.
No, it takes forever to heal.
Not the same.
It's like, what is going on here? So I've been in the process of healing for a couple months now from that fall. And again, when it happened, I should have attended to it right away, but I didn't. I did not have, not just arrogance, but, you know, it was a French-speaking country.
Yeah.
And my French is just nominal at best. So I thought, you know, no, I'll wait till I get back home because I live on the campus of the University of Chicago Medical Center.
Well, right, right.
So I thought, I'll just wait till I get back home. And I waited, which was a mistake, as it turned out, in hindsight. But I got back home, and they looked and told me I'd busted my patella. I didn't know what a patella was at the point. But it's like your kneecap, right?
Oh, boy.
So I apparently had just wrecked my kneecap when I fell.
I hope that gets better soon.
I do, too.
Definitely.
It's like I don't even have a cane.
Yes. You look great today.
Thank
you. I'll tell you that. You walked in here just fine to me. We'll leave it there. Ambassador Carol Mosley-Braun and her new memoir, Trailblazer, Perseverance in Life and Politics. It's available now wherever you get books. Thank you so much.
Bless your
Such
heart.
A pleasure.
Thank you.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by me, Sasha Ann Simons, edited by Daniel Tucker, and mixed by Micah Yason. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks for listening.